Since 1967, we've been spreading the bug of fly fishing at our Melbourne Fly Shop.
Join us as we celebrate the fun of fly fishing and chat with characters that enjoy it as much as we do.
Whether you're just starting out or have some experience, we hope our ego-free commentary helps demystify fly fishing and inspires you to visit new places and try new techniques. Welcome back, Andrew.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Where have you been?
Yeah, it's been a minute. I've been up north. Went up to far north Queensland to fish in the Hinchinbrook Fly Fishing Challenge up there at Hinchinbrook, Lucinda.
Awesome. Have fun.
Had an absolute ball, actually. I was, I don't know, a little bit anxious, nervous, don't know why beforehand, because it is a competition and it's one that I'm, it brings out the best in some very good anglers up there. And I just wasn't sure that I'd be able to, you know, match it.
It's a pretty prestigious competition with a very rich history, hey?
It is, yeah. It's incredible. The point I'd like to make is that Hinchinbrook's not really near anywhere. It's kind of remote. It's a bit of a drive from Townsville. It's a bit of a drive from Cairns. And it's become the meeting place for saltwater fly fishers of far north Queensland annually for this competition since the late 90s. So it's been around a bloody long time. And where a lot of things like this have failed or, you know, been a flash in the pan, these guys have been able to make it work incredibly. There's a level of commitment there that the folks, the organisers in particular, have that this thing's going to go forever. Seriously. Like, they just got it wired correctly. So, yeah, it's a bloody good competition. I reckon for a lot of people it is a competition. There's probably, 22 boats, I think there was, and around 43 anglers or something. Of those 21 boats, I'd say probably 10 of them are seriously competitive. They're having a tilt at it. They're like, you know, I'm into this. I'm really going to commit to it. They pre-fish. They do the practice. They practice their casting. They're tying flies for it months before. You know, they're on. It's their grand final day, if you like. So, there's that portion of the, you know, the anglers that turn up. And then there's another portion there that are like, I'm here for a good time. As much as I want to get a decent result, I think I can fish. I want to, you know, give it my all. But I'm also here to have a few beers, be social, have a good time. And then there's another little segment there that are probably more, I'm just here for the social time. I want to have some fun. I've done this competition many times before. I've maybe proven myself once before and I don't need to prove myself again. So I'm just here, you know, for the beers and to catch a few fish. So it's, you know, overwhelmingly though, everyone is just so social and wants to chat and you're dining together every night. It's such a great setup.
I mean, that's really what you want from a competition, hey?
It is. Yeah. It's undergone quite a few little changes over the years to try and structure it in a way where it really is run to benefit the guys, the people that are attending. So every effort has been taken to make sure that this is a competition for participants. The president of the Hinchinbrook Challenge, or the Hinchinbrook Fly Fishing Club, I think it's called, that organise this event. That's literally all they do. Their annual motivation is just to organise this event. So there's a lot of preparation in it, and honestly, I don't think it would happen the way it does if it weren't for Richard Stanhope. Richard is the president of the club, and he's very much involved in the whole day-to-day running the score sheets, the presentations every night. it for him, he's hustling, he's working every day of the event. So without him, it probably wouldn't happen. And then you've got a committee of guys below him, which are contributing as well. Most of them, if not all of them, are fishing in the competition as well. So their time is probably a little bit limited through the competition. But the lead up, organising the sponsors, organising all the logistics around an event like this, they're there and they're doing it.
I mean, managing a competition with 21 boats, 43 competitors, feeding a bunch of hungry blokes.
That's, you know, right.
Watering them with beer.
Yes. Yeah. And they found the ideal location for it, not just because of the fishery, but the Lucinda Hotel has been a great partnership for them because they've got the room where they can put all these fly fishers together. It's the perfect size for 50-odd anglers. And, yeah, it's just so well catered and it works. So, yeah, it honestly, I couldn't fault it. I didn't know what to expect going up there, but the way that it's run and the people that are involved, I just take my hat off to them because they're so committed and they're doing it for all the right reasons. So, I was just so happy to be involved. You know, like, we at the Fly Fisher support a lot of events and projects and they're all worthy and beneficial or whatever you want to put it. I don't know how to put it, but it's not about a sponsorship as such. Like, I don't think the sponsors with this event or many of the other events that we get behind, whether it's beneficial in a business sense, but what these guys have got going up there, it's just something that you want to be a part of. So for us, it's not a case of we weren't pounding them like, oh, we'd love to sponsor your event. It's got to the point now where it's on an invitational basis. So I was lucky enough, you know, or the Fly Fisher's been lucky enough to actually get involved with this competition. The room is full of the most hardcore saltwater fly fishers that I have ever come across. They're addicts. And I'm sure if you looked at divorce rates in the room, it would be quite high.
It's a demanding career, that of a professional saltwater fly fisherman.
It is, yeah. And the event, and I'll get into a bit more detail in it in a bit, but just to touch on it, it's 3 days midweek of fishing. So getting people to take 3 days away from work, family, and realistically, you got to be there the weekend beforehand to get set up.
Pre-fish,
get the boats all sorted, everything. It's a big time commitment.
And like you've said, the tying flies, time commitment, figuring out the leader combination that works for you, you know, all that stuff.
There's a lot of preparation for everyone involved. But yeah, getting back to the sponsors, it's incredible. So not just from the fly fishing fraternity, but there are a bunch of really great brands and companies that have gotten behind the Hinchinbrook Challenge because they can see that what's happening here is fostering saltwater fly fishing in Australia, and they're there for all the right reasons. But you've got Tackle World Townsville, you've got Advanced Drive Group, SHB Construction, EJ Todd's, Townsville Boat Hire, North Queensland Marine Art, Ketta Fly, that's just to name a few. And of course, Lucinda Point Hotel Motel. And interestingly enough, one of the, I guess, bigger brands to get behind it in recent years is the Mike Carney Toyota dealership in Townsville. To think that a car dealer would get behind a fly fishing event like this, I think speaks volumes as to what this event is and what it means to the people of far north Queensland. But yeah, really, really cool that they're involved. And of course, Manic Tackle Project. The challenge, of course, is called the AFO Hinchinbrook Fly Fishing Challenge. So AFO are, of course, our friends at Australian Fly Fishing Outfitters, Rodney Collings, good mate of ours, and one of the most respected fly fishing guides in far north Queensland. When it was under Dave Bradley, the previous owner of that business, they pretty much saved the Hinchinbrook Fly Fishing Challenge by rallying Manic Tackle Project to provide, I guess, the marketing and exposure as well as the prizes and really get this thing off the ground and save it from disappearing. So Manic Tackle and AFO in particular have had a long affiliation, and to a certain degree, without those two companies getting involved, it may not be the competition that it is today. So hats off to those guys, obviously. But yeah, look, it's a big effort from the sponsors, the committee, everyone involved, and what they've got is sensational.
And it's a pretty interesting structure to the comp in terms of a
scoring
system. You know, we normally look at like points for length of fish and things like that in, you know, your normal competition trout fishing. But this is a bit different.
It is, yeah. You know, for most people, the whole structure of the comp kind of starts with a pre-fishing on that weekend. It's a very tidal fishery, so having lots of different spots to pepper is really, really important. And then, of course, you've got 3 days of fishing and competing over 3 straight days. So it's lines in at 6:30 a.m. and lines out at 4 o'clock, I think. And then you've got to have held your submitted your scorecard by 4:30. If you're there at 4:31, disqualified. Sorry, no points that day. So it's very strict in terms of the scoring system.
That's a big day fishing.
Like, it's a monster.
You're fishing that whole time.
Oh,
you're competing.
Yeah, I'm still sleep deprived, and you know it's 6 days since I've been home. So, yeah, look, it's big. It really is. You know, as I said, grand final day. But over 3 days, and not to mention you're getting back early enough that you are tonguing for a beer after a big day's fishing. And so you tend to have a couple. And
especially in that North Queensland heat.
Oh, that's
4X
right.
4X gold goes down a tree.
I tell you what I'm on is 4X bitter.
Oh,
that's good.
That's like the craft beer for North Queensland.
I think it's the VB of North Queensland, but either way, it sure beats the 4X gold, I reckon. Anyway, I might have upset some people in far North Queensland for that comment. But yeah, so the fishing day, it's such like that, you know, early start. I think I had my alarm set for about 4:30 a.m. every morning because, you know, you want to have a coffee, you've got the boat to get ready. It's a bloody big day. And of course, we were making things even harder for ourselves by trying to make a movie on the whole challenge. As you know, we're trying to do something with Mick Curran, who is a really well respected filmmaker and of course part-time fly fishing guide out of Yay, Hurricane Fly Fishing on Instagram, I think he is.
Hurricane Fly Fishing Co.
That's him. So yeah, we know that this Hinchinbrook Challenge does have a very unique story, so we wanted to tell that and create a bit of a film around that. So Mick was on the boat with us every day, and you know, obviously we had some things that we needed to tick off with that in addition to trying to fish well in this comp. I was lucky enough to fish with Bob Bentley, who's a past winner of the competition. Bob has that fishery really well wired. So anything I caught was really thanks to Bob, you know, like knowing where to go and where to be at the right time is 90% of that fishery. So without him, I don't think the fly fisher or myself would have done so well in the standings at the end of the comp. But getting back to the structure and the way that it works, so there's target species. Now this is, if you can't keep up with this, I don't blame you because it is a bit of a complicated points system. But there are target species. So these are species that are deemed difficult enough to catch that they justify some extra points. So those species include barramundi, cod, flathead, golden trevally, finger mark or mangrove jack, any of the jack species, permit, queenfish, tarpon, and trevally. So if you catch one of these species, you do not receive any bonus points. If you catch two of these species, you do not receive any bonus points. However, if you catch three of these species, different species, you will receive an extra 250 points, which is generous. 250 points is a lot on the scheme of this competition. I think the winner had about 3,000 points. So that puts it in perspective. Yeah. Yeah, which is, I think, the most points of any winner during the history of the competition. If you catch four of the target species, you will receive an extra 500 extra points. So it's an extra 750, essentially.
That's
because you get it for the two bonus point species as well. So, or three bonus point species as well. So this competition isn't so much about the glamorous species. It is more about catching different varieties and different varieties, or should I say different varieties of target species, because there are things like barracuda and mackerel and other things that you will catch during the course of the competition that still are scoring fish based on their length. So a 50 centimeter fish will receive 50 points. You can see how even a big fish, unless it counts on the bonus point system, is only going to get you so far. The bonus points really make a difference to your scorecard at the end of the competition.
It's a tactical game, man.
It is.
It seriously is.
It took me a long time to get my head around, you know, the point system, but there are another set of points, because there are some species that are particularly hard to catch, and they want to encourage people to take the risk to pull themselves away from just catching the variety and targeting these more glamorous things, like permit.
Pretty glamorous fish.
Very glamorous fish, very hard to catch. Realistically, if you wanted to commit a day to it and you caught one, then you do well in the point standing, and that's the idea there. So each permit has its length multiplied by 10. So if you catch a 70 centimeter permit, it's 700 points. That's a real kicker. So it's an enticing way to get your point score up if you're really willing to roll the dice. So it might depend on how you're sitting during the comp as to whether you do that, or whether you play it safe and just try and tick the species off. Golden trevally, another quite difficult fish to catch. It has its length multiplied by 5. And then each barramundi that is 59 centimetres or greater has its length multiplied by 5 as well. So three fish there, all very hard to catch, but all get a little points bonus should you be lucky enough to get one. So that pretty much summarises the point system. It's the way that the fish are measured and recorded throughout the competition is each competitor is given a metal fish ruler. At the end of that fish ruler is a bit of right angle metal, so the nose of the fish goes hard up against that the right angle on the ruler. And then the tail, or the very end of the tail, is the fish's measurement. Now, every fish has to be 30 centimetres or greater. However, every fish is marked up. So if it's 29.1 centimetres, it is recorded as a 30 centimetre fish.
Rounded up to the nearest whole number.
Yeah. Correct. One of the very early lessons I got from my mate and co-competitor, Bob Bentley, was bend that fish. Make sure you get every centimetre.
Squeeze the tail.
So there are a few little tricks you can do, you know, to get the angle right on the fish to get that extra centimetre. And when you look at the scorecard at the end of the competition, there is very few points separating those top anglers. So it does make a difference. Now, there are many categories that you can win in this competition. Champion angler is considered the crown, if you like. That is what everyone's hunting for. But then there's champion boat as well, which is a combination of...
The team's division.
Yeah, yeah, team's division, exactly that. Then there are prizes for biggest barramundi, biggest permit, biggest golden trevally, and so on. So there's a lot of opportunities to win throughout the competition, and that's what makes it so great. You know, Bob, who I was fishing with, on the last day, he caught a barramundi that was 74.6 centimetres. And don't quote me on this, but the next biggest barramundi was 74.2 centimetres. I had to actually go to the image that we... Sorry, I've scooted on and I forgot to mention the photograph. But you take a photo of your fish on the ruler. But there were two fish caught at 74 centimetres for biggest barra in the competition. Now, the winner of biggest barra gets an able reel valued at about $1,500. So the prize pool here is significant.
Yeah, serious business. It's,
it is. Yeah. So for the guys that do put in the groundwork and... spend a lot of time and energy nutting out the fishery beforehand, the rewards are there to justify doing that. Bob's fish was only 3 millimetres longer than the nearest one, and he walked away with an able reel as a result of that.
Imagine being 3 millimetres away from an able reel.
Seriously. Yeah. I only just found out the other day who the underbidder or underscorer was, and it was someone that was in our house, and yeah, the poor bugger, you know, he's so close. Anyway, but that, you know, that sort of thing probably gets people back for the next year as well, being that close. So, that gives you a bit of an idea of the award system and the scoring system. These guys have done enough of these competitions. They know what works. So the fish ruler, you record with a handwritten score sheet, how long the fish was, the species of the fish. In addition to that, you take a photograph of the fish on the ruler and you upload that to a Dropbox-like folder. That works seamlessly. It actually works really well. So everybody's kept honest. Honestly, can't see how anyone could cheat. I don't think anyone in the room really would want to cheat anyway, because it's not
frozen,
about that.
Frozen fish from the market. Keep that in the boat.
Oh, he's onto it already. Jeez, this guy.
I want that able reel.
Everyone's a winner at this comp. There's a show bag when you arrive that includes a fly line, some line cleaner, a bobbin, RX hooks, you name it. It's a show bag that's got a fair bit of monetary value inside it, which more than covers the entry fee of around $300. So, yeah, look, everyone's a winner. I think, you know, everyone walks away having a good time and a win.
I think $300 entry fee is very reasonable for 3 days of fishing.
It's time for a short break to talk about the legends who bring this podcast to life. Our committed team at The Fly Fisher prepare, record, and edit in-house in South Melbourne. We put huge effort in for you listeners. We hope that means when it comes time to make a fly fishing purchase, you consider us. With your loyalty, we can keep producing these podcasts and bringing you the world's best fly fishing gear. So shop smart and support the fly shop that supports you. So... Me too. And the other thing that it includes is dinner for 2 nights or 3 nights. Might have been 3 nights. Like,
see, that's just crazy. Ridiculous. That's how much you'd blow on dinner.
Exactly.
Going out in, yeah, you know, to the pub.
Yeah. Like, you know. Yeah. I mean, don't look at the bar tab. If you factor that in, it becomes quite an expensive few days. But especially when you're buying beers from McCurran.
Drinks like a camel.
He does. But yeah, that's sort of how it all works. So it's been obviously massaged and changed over the years to create a score system that encourages everyone to do well. I think at the end, it's sort of, you don't need to be the world's best fly fisher to actually scratch up a decent score in this thing. And that's what I really like about it, you know. Dan Collins has won this event more than anyone, I believe. Dan lives in the area and he is a permit fishing addict. Now, if it were a three-day competition where we had to go out and just chase permit, my money would be on Dan. But because of this score system being the way that it is, it means that he has to stretch himself as a fly fisher to chase fish that he probably wouldn't through his normal day-to-day. There's a reason Dan has won that event more than anyone, though, and it's because he is an insanely good fly fisherman. At any discipline of fly fishing, he can get it done. So the more committed, the Michael Jordan-like competitors of this event consistently do well. Much the same as your trout fishing competitions, these guys do consistently well. Tom Jarman, consistently well. Daniel Ringer, consistently well. It's not chance. Now, I maybe naively kind of felt that in saltwater it might be a little bit different. It might be a bit more luck involved. There isn't. These guys that know what they're doing get it done.
It's really the mindset, isn't it? It's the 100%. Winning the mental. I'm going to get up. I'm going to make sure my leaders are perfect. I'm going to make sure my flies are perfect. It's the one percenters.
Yeah, and I think the what I learnt in my very limited competition fly fishing background, which is what, one day?
Competition.
2 days.
2 days. 2 days. 2 days. 2 days. 4 sessions.
Yeah. Well, you too. Yeah. We're expert we're competition huge fly fishing. I've done one more competition than you now, so I'm winning. But it's efficiency. The more casts that you make that are on point, the more fish you catch, the less time wasted tying flies on, repairing leaders, the more efficient you are, the more fish you will catch in the competition. The same rings true in trout competitions as it does in saltwater fly fishing competitions. The real extra challenge with Hinchinbrook is knowing where to be at what tide and being in the spot at the right moment. Native fish like barramundi, as you well know, they have a tendency to switch on and off. That bite window is very limited.
It is insane.
Yeah. There's just no fluffing about with that. You can't, like, when it's happening, you've got to be ready to go bang, bang, bang. Capitalize on that moment. I love that intensity personally. That gets me. You know, I when I think about it, the fishing that I really love is quite like that. I don't know. It's, yeah, it means that my fly fishing probably isn't therapeutic. But I love
it. It's pushing you to be a better angler. And, you know, I think that's something, even if you haven't competed, you can take from it. It's mindset is going to win you so many more fish, I reckon.
Definitely, mate. I couldn't agree more. So, yeah, the event, you know, we're sort of talking about how much of a competition it is, and it is. However, everyone there, even the guys that were at the top of the tree, they love to have a beer, love to talk shit, and have fun with it. It is as much a social time that brings the saltwater fly fishing community together of far north Queensland as it is a competition. So for that reason, I loved every second and I will be back. I'm going back. You know, like it's just fun. Which is weird. Like, I'm not a competitive guy in my fishing normally, but only when I'm losing. but yeah, look, it was just such a good, fun time. Now, I was fishing with Bob, and Bob really knows his shit. So I had the inside run this time. It was the perfect initiation for someone from Melbourne that knows jack shit about far north Queensland, Hinchinbrook fishery. So I was lucky. Next year, willingly and happily, I planted DIY, if you like. Do it on our own. Now, Mick Hurran, who was holding the camera the whole time, and I could tell how etchy he was getting.
He's a fishy guy.
He is. Like, yeah, torture. Yeah, it was torture for him. Yeah. Yeah. Fortunately, you know, he did get a chance to do some fishing before and after the event, but I could tell over those 3 days where you're up at 4:30 fishing hard all day, and to be perfectly frank, Mick can fish. So there was probably a number of times where he was looking at me just going, oh, Andrew, What are you telling? You know,
we've all felt that shame from Mick Hurram.
I know, I know. Yeah, it's like when my wife looks at me when I say something stupid. She, you know, it just makes you feel like you want to crawl into a little hole. You know, that's the way Mick was looking at me sometimes. Yeah, people don't forget Mick. But anyway, Mick, he loved the whole thing as well, and holding the camera the whole time was obviously a big commitment for him, and he wants to go back and do it. So the two of us are going to go back and do it next year, which should be just great fun. And I know that we'll be nowhere on the leaderboard. We'll be lucky to even catch a fish, but we're going to have a bloody good time trying.
That's it. That's the best thing.
Yeah.
Fun.
So yeah, it's a spectacular competition in an incredible part of the world. Now, you haven't been to Hinchinbrook yet, have you?
No.
Hinchinbrook's an island that just pops up out of nowhere, basically, and it's I think it's above 1,000 metres once it's at its peak. Yeah. So, and it creates this almost channel with flats between mainland Australia and the island, and it receives quite a bit of shelter from the wind because of the island, which makes it a year-round fishery
which
for people
you want
like
on
that.
The east coast of Australia.
Absolutely.
You want all the shelter you can get.
It's what makes or breaks many of those saltwater flats fisheries up there. So the weather, we were lucky. It was really pretty kind. We did have a bit of rain and a lot of cloud, but the wind was very kind. It was pretty pleasant boating and fishing conditions where you could – luckily, put the boat in at any boat ramp. You could scoot around pretty much anywhere without getting too wet. So, fingers crossed for that again next year. But it is an intimidating place for the boater. There's crocodiles, it's tidal. You know, for a mug from Victoria, it's a bit to get your head around.
Bit different to Port Phillip Bay.
Very, very different. Very different. Yeah, yeah. But there's safety in numbers, and the organisers in the committee, they have safety as the number one priority for the competitors. If you're not there at 4:31, alarm bells go out. You know, they will locate you anywhere within that fishery. It is whilst it's, I guess, a large fishing area, by the same token, you could be pretty easily found, I reckon, should you come unstuck. So, it's nice. If you ever want to branch out and do this competition, know that you're in very safe, capable hands where almost everyone in that room will bend over backwards to help you on your saltwater fly fishing journey. Now, to tow a boat up from Melbourne is a bloody big ask, but people do it. They've had competitors from Ballarat to, you know, wherever. People go to great lengths to get to this competition, which speaks volume about how good it is, how well run it is, and how much of a thing it is for saltwater fly fishers. So don't be intimidated by that, is what I would say. Just because it's a fishery you don't understand, get there a few days early, you know, get your bearings and get into it. I encourage anyone that's thinking about doing this competition to do it, because it is just that much fun and that good a social time. You're going to rub shoulders with some of the best saltwater fly fishers you'll ever come across.
And learn a whole heap. That's
absolutely. You
know, with the very limited one competition I've done, I learned more in that 2 days fishing than I probably did in a year.
Yeah.
Of, you know, it's stuff you just can't even comprehend thinking up yourself already on the internet. It's just like, you
know, totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without competition, there's nothing there to really push you.
No, nothing better. But you've got no reason to better yourself, really. Like, you know.
Yeah. That's the competition. Of course, you know, there's a lot of fun around the competition as well, to kind of entertain participants while the competition isn't running. AFO, you know, Rodney, he's a hoot. You know, he's always sort of thinking up things that people can get into during the competition, and this year he came up with a casting competition.
I saw some photos of that. It looked pretty festive.
I don't know how long he's been cooking this up, but you could tell that there'd been a fair bit of effort into it. He had a, it was like a metal flamingo at the end I think there was a palm tree and there was a column of lights leading
lots of
to
LED
the target.
Lights and
yep, and a metal permit at the end. So, look, we did get completely eaten by sandflies and mosquitoes that night doing it. So next time we'll be wearing more AeroGuard, but it was just such great fun. So that was one of the awesome things. And the other one is a Calcutta. So a Calcutta is a horse racing thing normally where competitors are auctioned off and you can buy teams. Whichever team you think is going to win, you can buy them. So when Dan Collins steps up and, you know, he's for sale, hands fly up in the room, and we're talking teams going for sort of $200 and $300 here. It's not
so there's money, but
it's not loose change, you know. But you know, if you pick it right, you walk away with the kitty. So, really good fun. And Rodney and Dave get up there and run the thing and do a great job of it, and lots of laughs. You know, it's good.
Sounds like a bloody lot of fun.
It is, yeah. It's just constant, you know, from start to finish. It's kind of the intense. It's busy, like there's always something going on, and that's what makes it so much fun.
And you had a bit of fun on the departure day.
Oh yeah, so like you know the results obviously came in, and of course everyone's like letting their hair down, you know, that night. So a lot of fun.
Bit
that,
loose.
Got a bit beers. Loose, but. It's 3 days of fishing. Everyone was knackered. You'd be chatting to someone and they'd just about be looking over your head because they're so starry-eyed, you know. So as much as I'd like to say it was a massive party, it was I think everyone was pretty spent, so it was pretty low-key in the end. But, yeah, the next day I didn't have anticipations of actually fishing because I was flying out that night. My friends at Mike Carney Toyota had lent us a Toyota for the film. So I needed to get that back to the Toyota dealership in Townsville. And so I thought, I probably don't really have the time to get out there. And Rodney talked me into it. He said, no, I reckon I can get you back to the boat ramp at 3. You'll be right. And, you know, what's the worst case scenario if you drop the car off late? So I was like, oh, yeah, no, you're probably right. So anyway, I emailed them and they said, yeah, no worries. There's a key drop box. Great. All right, let's go fishing, you know. So we went out onto the flats and the day was pretty idyllic. Probably the best day that we'd had the whole time we were there. We had bright sun. There was a fairly, you know, fairly light easterly wind and a bit of cloud over the island. So you lost a little bit of visibility, but it was probably still the best day that I've seen at Hinchinbrook for Polaroiding. And we got onto the flats and Rodney found us some permit almost straight away. Honestly, within like 10 minutes of showing up on this flat, boom, there they were. What did we do? We had shots and fish eat the fly and it was on. It was clear that we were actually in with a real shot of getting a permit this day, which I've done a fair bit of it. Now, it's not always like that. More of the permit fishing I've done is like, you get, you know, one or two shots and that's day done kind of thing. But there were numbers of fish on the flats this day. And fishing with Mick, who of course has been starved of any fly fishing, you know, for a few days, and he's looking forward to getting up onto the casting deck, albeit looking a bit starry-eyed because of tiredness. And I had one opportunity there where the fish actually ate the fly and then spat it before, you know, I was able to set it properly. And I just thought that'd be it. You know, I thought that's chance gone. And after that, switched out for Mick, got Mick up on the casting deck, and he had one fish eat the fly, and then another fish ate the fly on, like, it ate it and dropped it, and then the second fish came over and ate it, and he strip struck, but he strip struck like it was a 50-pound cod.
Pulling it out of a snag.
With 60-pound tibbet. And unfortunately pinged it off. So that was kind of opportunity done for him on that particular situation. But so then, yeah, soon enough it was my time to step up again. And we found some fish, managed to get the fly close enough to them. Fish came over and ate it. Yeah, strip struck. And, before kind of casting, I was giving myself a pep talk because I was like, you got to be calm, but you've also got to make
the composure.
Yeah, it's composure. So it's literally for me like 10 deep breaths. Look, this sounds wanky. I can't believe I'm recording this, but I know the enormity of catching a permit on a fly rod. And that plays on my mind and makes me not fish well. But in this instance, I was happy with the way that I did it. One of the real take-home lessons for permit fishing up there for me was the fact that you don't want to move the fly. Static crab pattern is all you need. In fact, if you do move it, it's more likely to spook the permit than it is to entice and eat. If they're maybe facing away from the fly and you can safely move it in order to maybe get a response from the fish, because the fish sense it. Look at a permit. Look at the size of the eye on it. These fish are so attuned to their surrounds. And that's why your cast just needed to be close enough. It didn't have to be on their head or 3 feet in front or anything like that. They find it. They sense it when it hits the water and starts sinking. They'll move to it. So you're better off leading the fish by a fair margin than you are trying to attack the fish with the fly. But then do everything you can to make sure that it's static, whether that be feeding a little bit of line out. The boat's more often than not drifting. There's current. You've got all these things to try and think about, as well as when that fish eats the fly to strip strike. It's not easy. And by some miracle, I managed to put it all together in that moment and catch a bloody nice permit of, I think it was 73 centimetres. But look, it was a great fish.
A nice fish.
And not like a real anak permit. Yeah. The kind that people travel to Australia from the US or wherever to catch. For me, it's been a bit of a monkey on my back because I have hooked anak permit before and lost them, hooks falling out, whatever. I have been cursed to a certain degree, and to finally get it done, I feel like it's lifted a load off my shoulders where I know the next permit I cast to, I will do it with a level of composure that I haven't been able to date. So I'm happy.
Congratulations on the permit. That's all I can say.
Thanks, mate.
Like you said, you've broken the curse. It's probably almost pinnacle fly fishing, catching a permit, pinnacle saltwater fly fishing at least.
Yeah, I think so. They're not an easy fish to catch and,
especially anak. It's not like your blockies, which aren't easy, but these are smart fish.
They are. No, I was just wrapped to get it done, mate. Like every opportunity you get to chase a fish like that is awesome. And I've had a lot of unbelievably good days on the water chasing Aussie permit without actually catching one. So maybe the reason that they're built up so much is that, not many people go out and just do it in one hit. There's obviously some fisheries and weeper, the Wessels, those kinds. If you see them on the right day, you're probably pretty likely to catch a permit. And the other thing I'd make with permit is sometimes you're getting them daisy chaining or, swimming around in circles where the opportunity is far greater. It's almost like chasing a trout during spawning time. You've got a lot of opportunity to catch one. My motivation has never been that. I would have taken it. Don't get me wrong. I would have loved to have caught one like that. But I love that the fish that I caught was just a pair of fish flying in front, all came together, boom, done, and it was a real one. So I'm sounding like a purist. What a wanker.
Put your dry fly on, put your tweet on.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Anyway, I'll stop talking about it. These guys have heard all about it for the last bloody 6 days. I won't stop harping on about it. The wife's sick of me as well. So anyway, but yeah. No, it was a great way to cap the trip off. Literally, it was, yeah, then buzzing back to the boat ramp, going over some pretty skinny water in the Maverick HPX with Rodney, and straight to the car and then to the airport. So it was sad. I was at the airport and I'd had no one to share a beer with. I just had to sort of, you know, look at the bubbles
and the planes.
Peter loves planes, folks. But yeah, that's look, Hinchinbrook, I love it up there so much, and I'll probably have newfound respect for that fishery, having now seen it on a really good day. Has made me more confident about that place. I'd be willing to, have 10 bad days of fishing there in order to just see it for one day like I did that day of flying out, because it was just spectacular. It was the kind of permit fishing that you couldn't compare to probably anywhere else in the world. It was just that good. It would hold a candle to anywhere. So, Hinchinbrook, AFO, Australian Fly Fishing Outfitters, for anyone that wants to experience that area, Rodney is the guy. Honestly, I fish with a lot of guides, and Rodney on this day, he was just incredible. The communication, the relaxed nature of his delivery, the way he was able to maneuver the boat on the pole, the way he was seeing the fish, he was guiding beyond himself. Like, he was just next level. It was, I don't know. Yeah, I couldn't recommend him highly enough for that reason. I think he's just got he's the ultimate saltwater fly fishing guide and weapon. Not to mention that he's got the Maverick boat, which is the best poling skiff on the market. It's just a hell of an experience. So, I'm going back.
Yeah, next year. It's on.
Probably in a few weeks. I always have a good time with Rodney and love that fishery up there. So try to get up there as much as possible. But Australian Fly Fishing Outfitters, you can Google them or look them up on Instagram.
Thanks, Andrew. Oh. Very good.
Thank you.
Big insight into saltwater competition fly fishing, and probably going to inspire a few people to want to go and do it.
Yeah, I hope it does. You know, especially the comp. I think, you know, the more people that get around this competition, the better it'll be. It's just such an important part of the fabric of fly fishing in Australia. So there really is no other saltwater fly fishing competition like it. It's, you know, it's the oldest, it's the one that's been around the longest, and it's in a fishery that is a spectacular saltwater fly fishery. So, yeah, I'd encourage anyone to do it, and at the very least, get up there and fish Hinchinbrook.
I want to get on a plane and go to Hinchinbrook. It sounds phenomenal.
It is good.
Seriously, and get in touch with Dave and AFO directly, or you can grab some information through us at the shop too.
Dave probably won't answer the phone, but Rodney will be there to answer your call. thanks, mate. Thanks for that. Of course, anything you want to know about the Hinchinbrook Fly Fishing Challenge, you can, of course, find them on social media as well. Search Hinchinbrook Fly Fishing Challenge. Thanks for that. Peter,
no,
really appreciate it.
Informing us on it.
And stay tuned, and hope you enjoy the next episode. Cheers.